Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. The Dakota political junkies are some of the best and brightest journalists in the state. We invite them to the microphone every Wednesday to take a deeper look at the political stories of the week. Today, we're going to start out with Dana Ferguson. She's a watchdog state government and political reporter with Argus Leader Media. Dana joins us from Sioux Falls. Dana, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to just get started with you right now, I think, while we wait for Kevin Wooster. He's supposed to join us here in a little bit. Dana, let's talk first about the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe and the marijuana crop, because you did a couple pieces on this week.
Sure, yeah. For those who are sort of in the cannabis community, it's a big day today, 420. So an appropriate time to talk about this. A couple of weeks ago, we spoke with the Attorney General, and he sort of confirmed that the state is still working on its investigation into whether the Flandreau tribe actually got rid of its crop. For a while in the fall, they were growing and saying that they were to open a resort where both native and non-native people would be able to smoke and use marijuana on tribal grounds. There was some conflict with the Attorney General and with other lawmakers who said that the tribe shouldn't be able to do that. And so that investigation is ongoing. The tribe was very quiet. They're not really able to speak about what they are doing at this time, but that was an interesting look at that.
Did they say, at some point that they had burned it, didn't they?
Correct. Yep. Okay. In, I believe, October, they said that they'd burned the crop. The Attorney General was skeptical, saying that he never saw a picture of that. There was no proof that it had been burned or otherwise gotten rid of. And as a result, he wants to get to the bottom of exactly what happened to that crop.
Seems like a risky thing to do, to say that you destroyed it and then not do it.
Indeed.
Not a good way to begin a relationship, at least, if as you work out the nuances.
Right, and that relationship had been pretty shaky from the time the tribe said that they were interested in pursuing that through the time they said they were suspending operations and then brought to the legislature a couple of bills aimed at loosening some of the state's restrictions on marijuana. So not the best relationship there, but I think it's something they're working on and trying to find ways to do what they would like to do with marijuana growth in a way that might be acceptable to the Attorney General.
And on the other hand, the Attorney General has no evidence that the crop still exists. He's just saying that he's skeptical because he didn't see evidence that it was destroyed.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to bring Kevin Wooster in right now. Kevin is a reporter for the Kelo TV Rapid City Bureau. He joins us from Rapid City. Kevin, welcome to Dakota Midday.
It's great to be here.
Dana and I were talking about updates with the Flandreau Sioux Tribe and Attorney General Marty Jackley's skepticism that the crop has been destroyed. This isn't the first time that, or the last, that the sort of confusion over tribal legal authority it has come up. Do you want to give us any perspective on that whole notion of what's legal on reservation land and prosecution off reservation land, how that fits into the state conversation?
Well, first of all, if I remember reading the story by Dana, the tribal lawyer didn't comment on this. I suppose you guys have talked about that, but seriously? Okay.
Go ahead,
if
Dana.
If you burned the pot, you wouldn't say, oh, for heaven's sake, Marty Jackley's out of his mind. What is he talking about?
Uh-huh.
Of course, I don't know how lawyers operate, but, you know, when you have an eye-raising moment in a story, that was my eye-raising moment in that story. I know everybody's criticizing Jackley about it, and I thought at the first, Marty, what are you doing? Have you gone off the deep end here? Hmm. And then there was the no comment, so maybe you guys have already explained
that. No, we didn't touch on the no comment.
Wow.
Not directly like that. So that was your eye-raising moment, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was amazed by that comment. But if you talk to the people on the reservation down in Pine Ridge, if you talk to people on Rosebud, they're all kind of confused about what comes next for them, because they love this idea that they could have a cash crop that actually works for them, and there's puzzlement that the state is so adamant about this, especially if there could be a way to figure out a way for them to operate without direct infringement on the state's right to set its own laws off the reservation. And if, you know, if anybody can figure out how that's all going to be settled with the rigidity, I guess I would say particularly on the state side, although Marty Jackley would argue that he's protecting South Dakota's interests beyond the reservation here, just as they argue that we're being hurt by Colorado, they would argue that that hurt would be magnified by the tribes in the state. And I guess I'm still trying to figure out how deeply we would be wounded by that.
So the state is saying it's not the victimless crime that the tribe says it is.
Oh, yeah. And they, Jackley and others that continue to believe in the war on drugs, even including marijuana, which a lot of us wonder about, you know, me included, argue that there are victims there and that you get to victims when you have marijuana easily available in younger buyers and younger users and just a syndicate type network that always crops up if you have these two jurisdictions with different ways of handling the drug.
Dana, are you seeing any signs of what's next in this conversation?
You know, it's hard to say, and to respond to the point that the tribe's lawyer didn't comment, I think that has more to do with that investigation being ongoing and him not wanting to sort of say anything that would hurt the tribe's cause as that investigation moves forward. I know that the tribe had said before that, earlier this year, that they're still working with federal officials and other tribes across the country to look for models that work and to navigate the federal policies so that they might be able to move forward with this in a way that would be constructive for them and satisfying for the tribe.
Okay, but I'd have trouble understanding how a lawyer whose client did what they said they did would in some way jeopardize a future legal move by simply saying, my clients did what they said they did. But, you know, I'm not a lawyer.
Certainly we heard from the Gear Up folks, the first thing they said was, you know, my client is innocent. So I guess that would be the point. That's typically the first thing a client a lawyer says is my client is innocent and this lawyer is mum. But Dana, you're thinking maybe that's just standard for the conversation. Let's not make a comment and see what happens next.
That's the best guess I have at this point.
So let's
go. You know him better than I do. I mean, you know, reporters have working relationships with people, and I have none with him. And, you know, hopefully sometimes we're able to kind of read why they're doing what they're doing. But for him to not even say, well, because of the continuing investigation, I'm not going to comment in this area at all, that would give me a little bit less of an eyebrow rise than what I got.
How much does it damage that relationship if they didn't burn the crop, Dana?
I think that would be pretty damaging, especially if they transported it out of state or they work with a company in Colorado. If that company had somehow transported it, I think that would be a big negative for the tribe moving forward. Obviously, that would foster distrust with the attorney general. It wouldn't be very good PR for that company in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And it could lead to charges if there is evidence that they transported it.
And it would give Attorney General Jackley reason to say, this is what I'm talking about. It's not all above board like they say it is. So it would fuel the fire.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, with reporters reading people they know pretty well, I think I know Jackley very well. And I'd be a little surprised if he would have said what he said just on pure speculation, if he didn't have some indication that they didn't burn the crop. But yeah. Again, that's me speculating.
Kevin, is there political subtext for Jackley on this issue now that he's kind of, I mean, he said, I don't think for a minute they destroyed $1 million worth of marijuana. So that's a pretty strong statement, I think. Is there political subtext to that for the future?
Well, I don't think it hurts you running as a Republican when you're not going to get very many votes on the reservation anyway, and running in South Dakota, I think, although times change all the time, and there's that libertarian spirit here in some areas, I don't think you can lose too much by the position he's taken. But I also know from talking to him a lot and arguing with him a lot on this issue, because he and I don't see 100% eye to eye on this issue, that he feels strongly about his position on marijuana. and about the need to not allow it to come into the state, even on reservations.
And he's not alone in that. We talked to Tony Harrison, who is the national trustee for the Fraternal Order of Police, who we were talking about heroin, and he talked about marijuana for quite a long time. So certainly not alone in some of those thoughts. Let's switch to elections a little bit. Dana and Kevin, I want to talk to both of you about this idea of South Dakota delegates sort of being contacted or wooed by their parties. Dana, let's start with you on the Republican side. What are you hearing about delegates being wooed ahead of the convention?
Had a story over the weekend talking a little bit about the Republican delegates and how they've been contacted so far, what it might take to win over their votes. It ranged a little bit in what they would say. I had one say that she'd really like to meet LeBron James and sit down for lunch if one of the candidates really wants her vote. So it was just sort of a fun story and fun to get a sense from them of what it might take. Obviously, Donald Trump has said that he's got sort of toys that he's willing to bring out. He's willing to woo the delegates and do what it takes to win them over. There are some FEC laws that govern that, but they're a little bit hazy, and I think the candidates might start taking advantage of that in the coming months. Obviously, South Dakota's primary hasn't occurred yet. We're a little bit unique in that we already have delegates selected for both major parties. So ahead of that primary, delegates are already coming into play.
Kevin, what is the election law say on wooing delegates? How much money can they spend? Do we know?
Pardon?
Can they spend a lot of money on individual delegates to buy their votes?
I think there's a lot of flexibility there. I was amazed at, I was listening to one conversation about one of the delegates saying that they were disappointed that they really hadn't been offered anything, which if you're just standing outside the system looking in, you say, what? But it's, parties. It's not the federal government. It's not the state government. It's political parties, and they have flexibility to do a lot of things, including the superdelegate thing that sort of exists in the Republican Party, but really exists in the Democratic Party, So
do our delegates not have a responsibility to the voters of the state to go and cast their vote based on what our primary election says? If the majority of Democrats say, we want you to vote for this candidate, don't they have to go vote for that candidate?
I don't know. If the voters love Donald Trump, do you think they deserve a responsibility? See, I'm getting old enough now, I don't care about that.
Do they have to carry out, or can they follow their conscience then? That's the real question.
I'm a little more familiar with the Democratic superdelegate thing than I am with the way the Republicans operate, except I always want to say as an aside, John Thune, do not go to that Trump campaign. You don't want to end up there. But it's not going to be good for your legacy. But and some people accuse me of being as a status quo-related kind of guy, which is funny because I was a crazy radical when I was younger. But the Democratic superdelegate thing makes a lot of sense to me, and that's because I like Hillary as a candidate, but because I know a number of the people and know how much they care about the process and about making sure the process is fair to the party and fair to the candidates, and they're reasonable people. Now, that may be different in other states, but my experience has been really positive with the, quote, superdelegates here.
Dana, you want to add anything to that before we move on to the notion of voting, how your state party members have gone to the primaries and cast their votes?
Oh, I would just add that at least for the Republican delegates, the state's bylaws say that they have to, in the first round of voting, support whoever the majority in South Dakota supports. Beyond that, they can vote their conscience, but they have signed forms to the effect that they will support whoever South Dakota Republicans support in that first round of voting.
And so it's once the first round is over, all bets are off, and they can go wherever LeBron James is standing.
Yeah.
Go stand in the LeBron corner, apparently. We don't know that that's going to happen. So let's go back. You were talking about younger years, Kevin. Let's go back about 23 years ago. This week is the plane crash that killed Governor George Mikkelsen, 7 others. I was out of the country when this happened, so I have very little reference, oddly enough, as to South Dakota for those days. Bring me back to that time and tell me what that day was like and how people heard about it.
Well, if it's possible for an entire state to have a collective broken heart, South Dakota had one that day. Mm-hmm. Very popular governor, very, you know, easygoing guy who was really widely well-liked and doing a lot of good things. So, you know, I was riding an Airdyne at the Y across from the Argus Leader at lunch because I'd just written a story about the eagle nesting, the first confirmed bald eagle nest in South Dakota in 100 years, and I thought that was going to lead the paper when I saw the Waco Branch Davidian thing blow up on the TV set and thought, well, there goes my front page story. And then we got a call from a kid who used to work at the Argus from Des Moines Register where he'd gone saying a state plane went down in Iowa. And within an hour, I think I've mentioned to you that I saw more tears in the Argus Leader newsroom than I'd ever seen before. And we were covering this story, you know, not just about losing a governor, which we lost, but you know, losing seven other people that all were important people, all were well-loved people, and all made a difference to the state. And it was a day like none other I've ever had as a reporter, and really a week like none other, because it was a week of grieving across South Dakota. And it left a mark on me and on most South Dakotans who went through it.
Talk to me a little bit about journalists in general, because you're still covering it. You're still doing the work that needs to be done to bring that information to people, but yet going through your own processes as well. How do you sort of manage that in a newsroom?
Well, I remember watching, I looked up at Deborah Wade Schmidt, and I saw her, and she'd write, her face was beet red, and she'd write, and then she'd fan her face because she was trying to collect herself and keep it together while she was writing, because so many of us knew him on such a personal basis. He was so approachable. And but not just the governor. I also remember Larry Fuller, who was the publisher at the time, getting us together. And after the meeting, I heard him sitting in his office saying, "Oh, Berkey, Berkey." And that was Dave Berkland, the banker there in Sioux Falls that Fuller knew well. And so everybody had an indication and a direct link like that. With me, it was Rowland Dolly, who was the governor's economic commissioner and who was just a kid from Presho, you know, that I knew my home county, and he was a little younger than I was. And reporters had to work through that. And we worked through that grief process ourselves as I followed the way that the governor had gone from his cabin on Lake Ponson on Sunday to when he drove back to Pier and then flew out, with the other guys on the Mitsubishi, and you know, followed it back after he lay in state, and he had the services at the Capitol and a funeral caravan from Pier back to Brookings, where he was laid to rest, and the people gathered along the way from Native Americans to little BFW groups along the road in Highmore or Herald or, you know, Cavour as they passed. It was, you just had to keep collecting yourself and putting yourself together. And when I got done at the end of the week, I sat alone by myself in my room and bawled. It's funny how it still comes back.
Dana, as you work at the Argus Leader, do you look around and see the legacy of that time in that newsroom, either through the people, obviously Brenda Wade Schmidt still there, some people are still there who did the work. Do you see the evidence of that, Dana?
Oh, absolutely, and I've not been here all that long, but those are some of the legacies that I think are still so present here, and some of the first stories that you hear when anyone talks to you about South Dakota government and politics. Just that memory is so vivid for so many people here who lived it, and for the community too. I mean, I don't think there's anyone in this community who doesn't know about that. And yesterday, I think it was a hard day for a lot of South Dakotans just reflecting back on it, and definitely takes a moment to just step back and remember and just try to move forward, I guess, in the best way you can.
And as much as you want a big story, that's not the kind of story that you want to cover, right, Dana?
Not at all. That is exactly right.
Dana Ferguson is Watchdog State Government political reporter with the Argus Leader. Dana, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Kevin Wooster is a reporter for the Kello TV Rapid City Bureau. Kevin, thank you for sharing your story as well.
My pleasure.
Coming up next, the music and moves of an era gone by. We stand under the street lamp with a Broadway star. After the break, you're listening to Dakota Midday, South Dakota Public Broadcasting.